I'm not the Tom Brady of anything that I do, you know? Like, and so who am I to not accept coaching, right? I mean, you could be a great counselor, Dylan. Abigail, I don't know exactly what you're going to do, but I know it's going to be like really successful and, you know, I'll probably work for you someday. But I'm just all I'm saying is like none of us are the Tom Brady of our fields, and even if we are, the people who are like the best in their fields are the ones who are willing to be coached even when they're at the top, you know?
Right. Tom Brady didn't get to the top by not being coachable. Exactly.
Your life, your journey starts now.
All right, Dylan, how you doing?
Great. How are you, Tyler?
Good. Abigail, how are you?
I'm good.
Today, we're diving into what it means to be coachable. And as we talk in all of our episodes about journey coaching, we just wanted to look a little bit into what is coaching? What does that relationship look like? When you study the most successful people, one of the things that they say consistently is that they have learned how to be a lifelong learner. And so one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is what does it mean to be somebody who is constantly learning and growing, and you know how that can be hard sometimes because of our own pride or thinking that we know better, or even just because you know some of our natural tendencies are towards not listening. And I know that's true for me. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get going.
I can think of one that it's kind of interesting. The way I think of a coaching relationship isn't necessarily like a specific, they're my coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's really somebody that I've learned from, somebody that I really look up to. And, you know, I was never really much of a sports kid. Like I was in sports teams as a kid, but I can't think of any coaches, like literal sports coaches in my life that I'm like, oh yeah, I learned a lot from him. Never really had that. But I've had a guy in high school named Simon that I think maybe accidentally became like a coach to me. Like I just really looked up to him and I started to ask him a lot of questions, and he's like, Dylan, let's go get coffee, let's go get a sandwich or whatever. And we'd hang out, started informal at first, and it was just like me wanting to him answer my questions, that type of thing. And then it turned into a more like, I think we did it bi-weekly, where he'd just sit down and we'd talk about life. He'd tell me parts of his story, he'd ask me parts of my story, and I just like learned a ton from him as a person. And it's interesting because I look back, if it weren't for him and other people like him, I don't know if I'd be where I am today.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
Like I look back on all the lessons that I teach other people, and usually the lessons I teach other people are the lessons that were taught to me by these other people that I've looked up to.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a huge benefit of coaching. It just snowballs. Like now you're going to teach other people the same things you learned, and then it just grows and grows and grows.
Right. And sometimes that comes in a context of something more formal where you have something like a journey coaching book, or you're maybe studying through the Bible or some, you know, other coaching or mentoring type of resource. But I think also it can happen informally, and then maybe it blossoms into something more regular like what you had, Dylan. I know I had a coach, a track coach in high school, who inadvertently through sharing parts of his own journey with us, with his athletes, we were able to learn and to grow a lot from that. And it wasn't until after when I was at the point of graduating high school that I really realized, oh, I benefited from hearing his journey, hearing the ways that he had struggled, particularly with anger, and then how that had caused a lot of problems in his life and what it was like to grow through that and what it was like to come out the other side of that as a new person and someone who'd really learned how to deal with that anger. And it wasn't until I was graduating and I was thinking about the things I wanted to say to people as I was leaving high school that I thought, you know, what did this guy teach me? And really began to realize how much he had actually coached me, not just as a track athlete, but as a person, as somebody who struggled with anger myself, especially during that season of my life. And just getting to see the way that he had dealt with it and how that had impacted me led me to understand, you know, kind of what you said, Dylan, just how important stories are and how important it is to focus on strengths and what it is that we can do to overcome our struggles. Because if you had asked me when I was 18, I had it all figured out. You know, I knew everything. I wasn't ever angry. And I could have taken on the world. And then as you start to go through life, you realize, man, I can't do everything. And I actually do have quite a bit to learn. So
sometimes it takes falling flat on your face to realize that.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the best lesson is falling. But sometimes I've noticed in my life, I've fallen and I've messed up. I did something stupid and I didn't even realize how stupid it was until somebody called me out and said, Dylan, like, get your crap together.
Yeah.
Simon being one of those people, I used to be really bad at showing up late to things and just repeatedly until I was like, even out of high school, I was interning at a church and he was somebody that worked at the church and I kept showing up late to meetings. And he, from personal experience, told me that I can't keep doing that because there's consequences to other people's schedules. I'm interrupting other people's plans. One, it doesn't look good on me. And that was one thing. He sat me down and he told me straight up, Dylan, you have to fix this because it's not going to work. It's not going to keep working.
Did you respond to that pridefully? Like, oh, I don't do anything wrong or make excuses? Or what was your response to that?
It's actually kind of funny the way that he brought it up because I think I had expressed a desire for somebody to do that for me. I don't remember it being specifically to him. I was reading a devotional that talked about, like, I think it was Barnabas. I can't remember exactly who in the Bible, but it was like somebody is a mentor to Barnabas or somebody else in the Bible. And I was saying to Simon, hey, like, I see this as really valuable, like, somebody saying the truth, even if it's hard. And I said that to him like a week before. And then he probably had it in the back of his head at the time, but he thought, I'm going to use it at a better time. But I showed up late and then he's like, hey, Dylan, remember that thing you told me in the Bible the other day, how it connected with you about wanting somebody to keep you accountable? Well, I'm going to keep you accountable right now.
Here you go. You're getting what you asked for.
Right. So I think I expressed desire, but he threw it right in my face and was like, yeah, I'm going to hold you accountable.
Abigail, do you ever struggle with accepting accountability or coaching or somebody trying to teach you? I don't know. Is that something you struggle with?
Not really. I think I've been working a lot on like taking criticism. And also I actually have it in an opposite way. I'm very critical of myself. So I have actually my coach is saying, hey, you're doing okay. It's okay. It's fine.
Mm. Yeah. So you're being coached not in like, it's still accountability, but it's just,
yeah, it's just not in like a different way. People don't really like see that as like actual criticism.
Yeah. And I don't know that it's criticism so much as it's somebody who's trying to coach you, you know, help you recognize like, hey, you know, it's good to hold yourself to a high standard, but also you don't have to beat yourself up. And I think that's important. And it's also one of the ways that I personally have learned to accept coaching and tips and just accountability from other people has been understanding that more often than not, especially when it's with somebody who has a position of authority in your life, when they're telling you something that they see that's maybe not exactly right in your life, they're usually not doing it to pick on you or to make you feel bad about yourself. I think most of the time they're actually doing it because they want what's best for you. And so that was for me the big light bulb of how do I be coachable or how do I take it when people tell me I'm doing stuff wrong? Because I used to get really defensive. And then it was, they're actually not doing that because they are a jerk. They're doing that because they really care about me and they want to see me grow and they want what's best for me.
I think that brings up a really valuable point about a coach should be somebody that sees the potential in you that you don't see in yourself. And they're willing to like speak that potential into you. And like Simon for me said, Dylan, look, you're show up late. You can show up on time. I've seen you show up on time. But if you don't get this together, it's going to be, there's consequences and you can't keep doing it. And he saw the potential in me and told me about it. And I still show up late sometimes, but I'm a lot better at it. And I'm more conscious about the effects it has on other people and even on myself too. But back to the point I was saying. So like coach should be somebody who sees the potential within you and is somebody who's wants to help bring that out to help you ultimately, like you were saying, Tyler, become a better person. Sometimes we need that extra external push too, I think. Abigail, you're saying like sometimes you beat yourself up more than anybody else needs to. And I think there's value in that sometimes, but I think having other people giving us grace in the midst of that, like you were saying, Tyler, is and saying, hey, don't beat yourself up too hard. But the way that you beat yourself up, I think that's valuable on some level. But if it doesn't go anywhere and it just stays this self-consciousness, this insecurity, that's where we need to get away from is the insecurity piece. You know what I'm saying? Having somebody else hold us accountable, giving us grace, reminds us that we can have grace for ourselves too.
Yeah.
When you are doing well, Abigail, how do you find a balance between holding yourself to a high standard and wanting to be successful and not beating yourself up in a way that that's bad for you?
Anytime I get to this point where it's like I'm really critical of myself, I always just try to focus like, I don't know everything and I'm not going to know everything. And what can I do? And so like, I just, I push myself back to reality. Like, it's okay. Like, I don't have to fix all the world's problems. Like, I don't have to be the person that fixes everyone's roads. It's hard to still not be critical because I think it's making me grow and it's refining me and my strengths and my weaknesses. And so I still do it. But when it gets to an unhealthy point, that's where I'm like taking so much weight on myself. And it's just like, it's not worth it because I can't fix it. That's the reality.
When it leads you to give up, then it's become unhealthy.
Yeah.
Not just a high standard for yourself, but you beat yourself up so much that you're like, I just quit.
Yeah. But I think I also am pretty lucky because if I didn't have people like my mentors and my coaches and my friends and my family, they all show a lot of appreciation for the things that I do. And so that's what kind of makes this worth it to me, because although it's uncomfortable, I know that I have people around me who are saying like, hey, you're doing good. Like, it's going to be okay. And that's what makes it easier. Life is suffering. You know, you can't run away from it, but it can be better. You can make it better. And also the people around you can make it better.
Mm. Yeah. So one of the things that you said, Abby, as you were talking about just, you know, what it means to accept accountability and be critical and also not get to the point of being so discouraged that you just give up. It reminds me of a verse from the Bible, which is in the book of Proverbs in the 29th chapter. And really, like, if you're in the Bible and you put your finger dead in the middle and you open it, you're probably going to be in Proverbs or in Psalms, which is another book like right towards the middle. And Proverbs are just, it's a collection of sayings, of teachings. And so it's something that's really easy that you could just kind of open up to if you're thinking, hey, I need some wisdom from the Bible. You could open to Proverbs and just read one or two verses and there would be something there for you to kind of grasp onto. It's really practical. And there's just one verse that I think of and that I was thinking of as Abby was talking. And it's the first verse of the 29th chapter of Proverbs. And it says, he who is often reproved yet stiffens his neck will suddenly be broken beyond healing. And reproved just means, you know, it could be reprimanded, but it could also just mean taught.
What does reprimanded mean, Tyler?
Okay, I'll go with your example, Dylan. It reproved is just Simon going to Dylan and saying, hey, Dylan, you have been late a lot and that's been affecting other people's schedules and it's not very respectful. And so I want to see you be on time more. That's a reproof. That's just somebody kind of pointing out a way that they think you could do better. The verse here in Proverbs says, he who is often reproved yet stiffens his neck will suddenly be broken beyond healing. And a stiff neck or a hardened neck in the Bible implies somebody who refuses to accept criticism or to bow in submission or even to just nod in agreement. Like, not saying that you have to maybe even completely agree with somebody, but you could at least say, yeah, I can see how I could need to grow in that. And the idea comes from animals, livestock, like farm animals. In the case of an animal refusing to respond to a command. So a stiff neck is like if you put a yoke on an ox, or you know, you put a piece of equipment on an animal and you're trying to steer the animal. The only way that works is if they allow their head to be turned, right? Like a horse or any kind of animal. And so if you're trying to turn an animal to go a different direction and it doesn't want to go that way, it stiffens its neck. It doesn't let you use the farming equipment to turn the animal's direction. And so the Bible will use this all the time, this idea of a stiff neck, to mean somebody who's not coachable or somebody who can't take reproof. And so I think it's just this reminder of it says right there, if you stiffen your neck when people try to help you grow, you're going to be broken beyond healing. And that, I'm not saying that anybody is like too far gone, but there's this warning, this idea that, hey, things are going to go much better for you if you learn how to be corrected and if you learn how to be coached and if you learn how to take people's input and then move forward as opposed to constantly fighting back against the people that are trying to teach you. And that doesn't mean the people who are trying to teach you are perfect either. And the best coaches will acknowledge to you the fact that they're not perfect. But even from somebody who is not a normal coach to you, even from somebody who you might not even look up to in that way, you can still learn from them. And I think part of being coachable is being able to learn from anywhere, from any type of source.
Right. And no matter how far along in life you are too, you could be a professional who somebody calls you out and says, hey, you need to do this or do this. And like, what's that Tom Brady story, Tom?
Yeah, you remind me of this story. So Tom Brady, if you don't know, he was a quarterback for the New England Patriots for a long time and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he won a lot of Super Bowls. He's considered by many to be the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. And there's this story that one of his teammates, a guy that was a tight end or a person who catches the ball on his team, tells this story. They were in practice one day and they get done practicing. practicing, and the defense had beat the offense really bad in practice. And at the end of practice, in the pros, they go in and they watch game film. So they watch the practice back, and the coach kind of points out things that they did well, things they didn't do well. And the coach was saying things like, our quarterback play was absolutely terrible today, and they did this wrong, and they did this wrong, and they did this wrong, and this is the reason that we're not doing well. And so this is Tom Brady, a guy at that point who had already won the Super Bowl a bunch of times. He's like the best quarterback in the whole world in the history of ever. And the coaches are just calling him out, like really, really going after him in this practice in front of their whole team. And everybody's kind of like, wow, like he's saying that about Tom Brady. Like he's telling Tom Brady that he played really bad today. And so then this teammate of his tells the story. He was leaving practice that day and he saw that Tom Brady had gone back out to the field and was working on this drill to fix the very thing that the coach had said they were doing wrong that day, that he was doing wrong that day. And they came back to practice the next day. And I think he said there was like 45 or 46 live reps against offense and defense. And the offense won every single one of them. They did not lose a single snap, single play. And it was because Tom Brady was just outstanding that practice. And it just goes to show, I mean, this is the guy, if anybody in the world could say, who are you talking to? Like, I know it. I'm the best there is. Like, I don't need to be coached. Like that guy, he could have been that guy, but instead he chose to take the coaching, even if it was harsh in that case. And, you know, football coaches are just kind of like that. And he took the coaching and then applied it. And the very next day he was perfect. You know, they won every single play. And so I think that's just this idea, like the people that are the most successful, even after they've already started to be successful, are the ones that are willing to still accept coaching and put it into practice.
There's a really perfect example of what it means to actually be coachable. No matter how much we've learned, how far we've come, no matter how successful we've been, it's, are we willing to still accept constructive criticism? Are we willing to accept that I'm not perfect? I want to keep working towards that, but realizing I'm not perfect.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, who am I? I mean, I'm just like some guy. Who am I? I'm not the Tom Brady of anything that I do, you know? Like, and so who am I to not accept coaching, right? I mean, you could be a great counselor, Dylan, Abigail, I don't know exactly what you're going to do, but I know it's going to be like really successful and, you know, I'll probably work for you someday. But I'm just, all I'm saying is like, none of us are the Tom Brady of our fields. And even if we are, the people who are like the best in their fields are the ones who are willing to be coached even when they're at the top, you know?
Right. Tom Brady didn't get to the top by not being coachable.
Exactly.
Yeah. No one is just born with talent like that. You have to work on it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure at some point, coming back to the potential thing, I'm sure Tom Brady had the potential. He didn't have the skills, he didn't have the successes, he didn't have the Super Bowl rings, but he had the potential. And somebody, I guess I don't know the guy, I'm just assuming that somebody saw the potential that he had and they poured into him, and he was humble and willing to accept teaching from somebody else.
Yeah.
And became who he was because of it.
Well, I feel like this idea of being coached or doing something like Journey Coaching, where you grab a couple of these books and you sit down and you have coffee and you just talk about each other's lives, even the person who's being coached can benefit from that. It's this opportunity to learn from someone else's journey while also discovering how your own journey has shaped you. And so as you do those kind of things together, as you work with other people, talk about your strengths and talk about the life events that have shaped you and kind of play off of each other, you just will mutually grow and learn and kind of develop on your journey as well. And so you think, you know, whether it's the sports coaching analogy is not a perfect one. You know, those coaches aren't necessarily learning a ton from their players, but even just like in a person-to-person standpoint, like the way that we interact with each other, you know, even when I'm talking to somebody who is maybe much younger than me or whatever, I still feel like I learn a lot from middle schoolers that I talk to on a regular basis. You know, I feel like I can learn a lot. And I think the people who are the most successful in life are the ones that are willing to be lifelong learners. Just like, I've never like made it. I've never reached the end until I get to heaven. Up until that point, I'm just continuing to grow. I'm just continuing to develop. And that doesn't end until I'm not on the earth anymore. So
in order for coaching or like just learning something to work, is you have to be willing to let it work. There's a funny joke that I use as a counselor, like quite often, especially with new clients. I'll say, how many counselors does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Just one. But the light bulb has to want to change. And I think the same thing applies to coaching. How many coaches does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but you have to want to change.
Yeah, right.
And you're not going to take coaching if you're not willing to change. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think coaching has to be complicated either. I think we can just, you know, again, whether you grab the journey book or another resource, we just want people to be in these intentional relationships where they're helping each other recognize their strengths, helping each other kind of isolate their stories and understand how their stories shape them, and then use that to, you know, the conversation and the growing will come naturally out of people that are being intentional about meeting together and wanting to help each other learn and grow. And so the Journey Coaching book is a great resource for that. You don't even have to start there. You could just start with a cup of coffee and hey, tell me about yourself and see where that goes. Kind of like how your coaching relationship when you were younger, Dylan, it was, hey, I just have these questions and you seem like the person to ask these questions. So can we just go get lunch and I ask you questions? Like that can turn into, and for you did turn into, this really impactful coaching relationship that you'll take with you, you know, for the rest of your life and even now use as you coach others. So, you know, I just think it's so important and it can be so beneficial. And so one of the ways that we want to encourage people is to just take the leap to get into those relationships.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next time and make sure you like and subscribe. Visit us at journeycoaching.org and check us out on Facebook and Instagram. Start your own journey at journeycoaching.org. Your life, your journey starts now.